You're listening to Your Music, Your Business, a podcast helping you to explore the business behind your music. Hello and welcome back. This episode on Your Music, Your Business, we are talking with Meredith Fannin, the director and co-founder of Darkwave, an accounting firm that specializes in arts, entertainment, and media production accounting. Welcome, Meredith. Thanks so much for joining the podcast.
No worries, Jess. Thanks for having me.
You're so welcome. Well, I want to start off today by laying down some ground information for our listeners, those musicians and music industry professionals alike. How do you set up a music business for this example, let's start with a music project from the start correctly, instead of the multiple layers most of us go through with our artist careers?
Yep. So if you were talking about an artist setting up a business, then the first thing that they would do would generally set up an ABN. If it was a sole trader, like a solo artist, then they would usually set up a sole trader ABN, which is essentially linked to their individual tax file number. If it was a band, then the easiest to do is to set up what's called a partnership ABN. So basically with both of them, they're through the Australian Business Register, which is a free service. And you pretty much can put in your details, you write what industry you're in. They'll generally always ask you a question first, that are you a hobby or is it a business? And like, no, I'm now at the point where I want to be a business and not a hobby. And you get through that. Then it'll just ask, okay, what's your industry? Well, I'm a musician, or I'm a record label, or whatever it happens to be. And then it's just asking things like your tax file number and your personal details. And that's so that they can find you through the government websites and link up that ABN to you. That is step one. Usually step two is deciding on whether you need a business name or not. So that would be, if you're a band, then you might want to register that band name straight away. So the business name, you can now do, there's now a consolidated site. So when you go and get your ABN, you can then register the business name on the same site. Or if you, at that point in time, if you're not sure what you want to call yourselves, then you can register separately through ASIC at a later stage. So you don't need to do it right at that point in time. The next thing you do after you've got your ABN and possibly your business name is you'd set up a business bank account in the name of the partnership, or if you're a sole trader generally, you'd set up a bank account that was separate to your personal bank account that you're using for just all of your personal expenditure and other things. Once you've got that, then it's more about domain names and websites, so registering those. If you've got a business name, then it's easy to register a .com.au domain name as well. Mm-hmm. Or you can just register a .com depending on availability. Once you've done that, then if you've got your ABN, you've got your bank account, you've got your business name, you've got your website, then you're pretty much good to go. So then the next thing is really looking at whether you need any software or things like that. If you are, depending on whether you're registered for GST or not, or if you, depending on how much activity there's going to be, some people would just use spreadsheets to start off with. There's now heaps of different apps and free software. There's things like Henry, which pretty much do everything for you. And there's a new one called Friday, which pretty much does everything for you as well. But the and then there's things like Xero, there's Rounded, there's Zoho Books, there are so many, and there's new ones coming up all the time. But the idea with all of them is to try and make the business side of it, so the record keeping side, as simple as possible. So it's all about making sure that all of the income and expenses are going through the one bank account or one credit card, so that it's easy to then record the transactions. They now all have a lot of AI in the back end of them that will try and code expenses to the right expense codes and income to the right income codes. A lot of them will have invoicing capabilities as well. There's things like ones that are full service like Henry, and what that does is you pretty much set up a Henry bank account and they withhold the tax and things like that as well. From a cash flow perspective, generally that is sometimes not great, but other people, like some people love it. The other thing is, so then you can pretty much just choose which one works for you and then go move forward. So that's pretty much the main things. The only other things to really look for would be insurance. So that's if you've got a lot of equipment or you're doing a lot of touring, then you'll need public liability insurance and generally equipment insurance. There's some low-cost insurance companies. There's one called Duck for Cover that it's a not-for-profit. That's for really like the individual performers and things like that that might just need public liability for a few things. And then there's heaps of entertainment insurance brokers around that can help if you need something more substantial than that as well.
Definitely. Wow, what a comprehensive list. I loved that. I also loved that. I think I've ticked almost all of that off in my list as well. You. but I think, like, I do want to come back to that point that you made about having a business bank account that is separate from your normal everyday, because from an accounting perspective, it obviously makes your job a lot easier if all of those expenses are locked away into the one bank account instead of riddled all the way through our personal accounts. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. So, I've been doing this for a long time, so I've seen, you know, a lot of varying ways of doing things and some interesting ideas of how things might be done. But generally, yeah, if you do have a separate one, then it makes it really easy to, one, know exactly what's going in and out of that business account. So then even if you might have outsourced the, say, bookkeeping side of it, from your own perspective, you can see how much is in your account, so you know whether you're making money or losing money straight away. But it also gives you the ability to then transfer money out to a separate personal account. So especially when you're a sole trader and you don't technically pay yourself a wage in the business, it's more, I want to get paid something, so I'll have an automatic transfer going out of the business account to a personal account to pretty much make sure that you're getting paid something if you're able to. I'd say what one of the main areas we see is generally with partnerships. Like a lot of the time they won't have a partnership bank account set up and they'll be using one of the band members will just say, I've just been running it through my bank account and it's been mixed with all of my other income. And it's messy from a record keeping perspective, but it's also messy from a band perspective, particularly when if it's a band that starts like doing really well and then suddenly they're like, what's happened? Like, are we owed any money? Like, it's all those sort of things. And it's harder to keep track of if it's all sort of been dumped into one account that might have someone's personal stuff. And then, like, especially now, like, there's quite a lot of artists that are in a few different bands, and if they've mixed all of that together, it can take a little bit of time to pull it all apart.
Yes, and time in the accounting world also means money as well. It's a very hard process to unravel. So if you get it right the first time, it's very important. And
that's,
I think,
right, yeah.
Yeah, and I think, like, what I wanted to add as well for the listeners is, like, you know, we see setting up an ABN and registering a business name as potentially something that is a hard and difficult task, but it actually is so easy. And I think, like, I have definitely come across a few companies that have tried to sell me that they will set these up for me, and it's just absolutely not necessary.
That's right. There is one that especially if people Google, say, register ABN, and these ads come up for ones that look like they're the government site but aren't, and then they'll charge you $200 to get an ABN when it's actually free to get.
Exactly. Yes. And the ABN's free, but the business name you do have to pay for, to my knowledge.
That's right. Yes,
yeah.
That's right.
And yeah. Yes, I think I've registered a few business names under the one ABN in the past, and it's been always hilarious when I like a few weeks after I've registered it through ASIC in the correct way, I always know that I've done it right when I get a letter in the mail from some spam saying, you've registered this business name, would you like to get the domain? I'm like, oh God.
Yeah.
Like, if you don't know any better, that is exactly what you believe can happen. So it is really important to have conversations like we're having today. So I'm glad.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, because you'll get the spam ones about registering domain names and also sometimes registering trademarks as well for thousands of dollars. And yeah, generally, like if you're registering a business name or ABN, it's abr.gov.au, and if you're registering Australia, the trademark, it's through IP Australia. So if you know those two websites, then you pretty much can't go wrong.
Yes. Thank goodness. And I think, yeah, looking at it from a back to the bank account perspective, it is so important, particularly when you do start throwing that the mindset of other people being in different bands and the different income streams and being able to track that. Even as a band manager myself, I'm always saying, well, you know, we've got to make sure we know what our budget forecasting is and how much we've been able to keep to our budget, and also keep track of those tiny little expenses and subscriptions that always get lost in our mindset sometimes.
Yeah, and that tends to extend towards things like PayPal accounts, where sometimes one band member will set up their PayPal account under their individual account when it's really meant to be for the band, and then if that band member leaves and then the other band members are like, well, how do I access that? Yeah. It's still going to someone else's PayPal account because it's all linked to, you know, TuneCore or Bandcamp or something like that. And that makes it really quite difficult to unravel it sometimes.
Yes, definitely. I'm sure you've seen it all. I want to move from setting things up right to the current changes that are happening. What mm-hmm. is the best way to stay up to date with tax and super changes happening in Australia currently in an easy way that we can actually take it in, not the government? Yeah.
So I would say the easiest things are just looking at things like sometimes LinkedIn has some good things. Podcasts in general, there's a couple of pretty good ones around that are more casual discussions on just general like tax changes and things like that. Even things like Media Arts Entertainment Alliance have newsletters and things like that, as do APRA and COS. All of those ones, if they're big changes, then they'll tend to pick up on those as well. Failing that, things like the ATO, it's a Facebook page.
I could see you go all cringe.
But it's actually quite good with what it does do is they're good at trawling through. Sometimes there'll be things that come up on like social media, things where people kind of go, oh, there's this workaround, or I know I can claim this because I've seen an article on it. And they're good at jumping on those if they're incorrect and saying, you know, we've heard that people have been saying that you can claim, I think it was one recently where they said, well, we've heard all these, there's a lot of reports that you can claim a handbag. Well, that can only be when it's in these, and then they'll list all the circumstances when it actually can. Whereas what people tend to do is they'll grab the headline and go, I can deduct my handbag, and that's all. They won't go to the next level. They won't get to the next level of actually how that works. So, look, it can be good sometimes for those sort of things as well. But, yeah, in general, definitely for people in the music industry, just looking at any of the main music websites is a good place to go. And they're also just on the ATO, they do have a section for different occupations, and they do have one for performers, and it's just a really helpful little it's basically information sheet on what performers can claim. So it's things like when you can claim wardrobe and when professional library is allowed to be claimed and all those sort of things. So it breaks it down into sections, so that's actually really helpful as well, and they update that every year. But yeah, and then like pretty much every, like we do blogs, and I'm sure like most other accounting firms that specialise in entertainment also do them as well, where they'll just sort of give just general information about what's going on and what you can claim and what you can't. Probably the biggest thing at the moment's been just the changes in super. So just that when you're a sole trader, and even though you're running your own business, you're still entitled to super if that payments for your own skills and labour.
We couldn't hear it, so that worked well.
You might need to, oh, sorry.
It's completely fine. We can come back and restart. I'm glad that you can't hear the muffle of the microphone though. They must be amazing AirPods.
Yeah, okay, it's in now, sorry.
No, you're fine. Would you like to start back on the change with Super?
Yeah, okay, cool. Yeah, we'll go from there. So with what happened was that there was a high court case, and as part of that, it was all about whether a contractor was an employee just for Super, not an actual employee, but for Super, that they were deemed to be an employee. And the High Court ruling was that, yes, they were. So part of that was the agent changed all of their information on the website. And as part of that, it was very much, right, well, if you are a sole trader and your work is for your own personal skill and talent and labour, then you should be paid Super at the normal Super guaranteed charge rate. And that is effectively, most people have assumed that starts from 1st of July 2022 onwards. And from a practical point of view, what most people are doing now is they're putting their Super details on their supplier invoices when they send them through. But normally they will have, before that time, have made sure that they've negotiated with whoever they're doing the work for. So if they're a session musician, they'll say, well, my rate's, you know, $500 a day or $350 a day, and that's plus Super. So that then they don't have people coming back going, oh, we had no idea, we didn't budget for that, we thought that it would be inclusive, or, oh, we don't think we need to pay you Super. So it's to really stop a lot of that. Now the ATO, through their tool, they've got like a am I eligible for Super tool, and you can pretty much put your details in that. And now it actually has a separate section where it says, are you performing in, you know, theatre, music, TV, film? And if you say, as soon as you say yes and you're a sole trader, it comes up and says, yes, you're for GW.
Amazing.
So it's good. And I think it's like great from just a perspective of building people Super up early too, especially when they don't earn a lot of money, and especially with a lot of people being mostly freelance at the moment, it'll just help them as they go through life. As the years go by, they'll start to have a little Super buffer there that they slowly growing.
Yes, definitely. That's going to be a very big game changer for the music industry, particularly when, you know, we're looking, Lord, like a 30 to 60 years down the track, when these, you know, the Super does actually start to kick in, depending on when in your life cycle this is going to start. We'll actually see musicians and performers actually have a sustainable Super, because it is a huge issue if they haven't actively thought to put that aside for themselves.
Yeah, that's right. And it's hard for especially the session musicians that do work for various different bands, and, you know, they're on and off schedule and things like that. If they get the money in their own bank account, generally they're not going to put it into Super, because there'll be a point in time where they're going to actually need it to pay bills and things like that. But if they are already getting paid their fee and then Super's paid on top, then it's something that they don't see, but it's growing and it's accumulating for them, so that they've got it when they need it.
Definitely. And also changing the mindset in the music industry in particular around the fact that these are human beings, that we're not just employing for an hour or a few hours of work. They do have a career in this, and just because they are invoicing us and that's the way that we've accepted employment in the music industry doesn't mean that they're not entitled to Super.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Very, very fascinating change in the Super space. Is there anything tax space that's changed recently in the music industry that we need to know about?
No, look, not really. Everything's about the same as it was. I mean, the biggest things for I guess people in the music industry, one is just that if they're further individual side, a lot of people will be eligible for special professional income averaging. So that's essentially for artists, but it can sometimes extend to other people as well. But if you are not an artist and you think you should be able to claim it, the best thing to do is to get a private ruling from the ATO to ensure that you are in in fact entitled to it, rather than just putting it in your return and then just hoping that they don't ask any questions. But yeah, certainly if you are a musician, it's 100% you're eligible for it, and there's no question about that.
Amazing. Very, very good to know. It's got me like thinking about all the different ways, particularly as an artist manager, of how to make sure that we're utilizing our super and tax in the best way possible, realistically.
Yeah.
Now, commonly, I want to switch to the artist management versus the musician side when looking at accounting now. Commonly, an artist and their artist manager will approach you for the services with Commonly, an artist and their artist manager will approach you for your services, and with a shift in economic pressures and more musicians seemingly going independent for longer, what do you feel has been the trend in working with musicians versus artist managers at the moment?
I think there's been a bit of a shift. I think now what I'm seeing more of is that the artist, if they're not officially co-managing, then they're certainly taking a far greater interest in what's happening in the finance side. So everything from, because I don't necessarily want to know how to reconcile transactions and that sort of that technical thing, but they really want to know is, how much money do I have? How much money is it going to cost me to promote my next album? What's my budgets for my touring like? How much am I going to make? Especially what we're seeing with, we're seeing it a lot with the solo artists that might have a lot of session musicians and things like that. They'll see these budgets where the manager's in there, artist manager, session musicians, production, everything, and then in the end they're like, oh, we'll break even, and the solo artist is like, well, so I don't get paid anything. And they're very much like, well, they want to at least make sure that they're getting something as well. Within and having it worked into those budgets. But it's also just, especially if they're signing advances with a record label or a distribution deal, and they're getting those certain like marketing funds and things like that, they're wanting to know exactly how that's been spent and if it's been spent in the most effective manner and things like that as well. Because especially after COVID, and I think during COVID as well, there was essentially a shift at that time where people, because they were sort of sitting at home, they're like, well, how does this actually work? And well, how's my money actually been managed? What part of this is actually mine versus what do I need to keep in the actual business itself? And how is that going to grow over time? So there's been, I think, a more of an interest in how that works, and especially just in terms of making sure that they're generating income through all the different avenues, whether it be making sure that they're everything from making sure that they're on all the neighboring rights, that they've got all the merchandise, that they're pretty much making sure that every avenue is covered in terms of how they can collect revenue, that's aside from just live performance and typical royalties through publishing and recording.
Yeah, that's a really interesting trend that you've picked up on. And I think like you explained that you think COVID might have had a very big part to play in that. But how much do you think you can see from your end is a difference in, maybe potentially the way that an artist manager and a musician relationship has now changed, or whether it has nothing to do with either of those two things and more to do with the fact that technology has now put so much into the musicians, like back into the musicians' hands now?
I would say it's more the latter, that it's definitely that because technology has put a lot more back into the musicians' hands and they've got a lot more control over how things can be run. But also just from, I guess, our perspective from the accounting side, like at our firm, we use Xero, and part of what we do is when we are using Xero is that one of our requirements is that, yep, the artist manager is in Xero, but so's the artist. And we always do a training session with the artist to show them, if you ever want to jump in, here's how you run reports, here's how you run your profit and losses. So it's very much if they want to ever deep dive in there and see what's what, or if they just want to have a look, then it's always there for them, and there's always reports in there and snapshots and things like that, so they can see what's there now and also historically what has been there in the past. I think that, and that's certainly something that technology has enabled. Prior to that, when we're all using, we used to use Mile before Xero, and it was not online, there were no bank feeds, and it was very much a whole, you know, generating a reports that would then go to the manager who would then pass them on to the artist sort of thing. And yeah, that has changed. So it's now very much a very open conversation as to how everything's going. Still, there is certainly times where we'll send everything to the manager first. So is this, are we missing anything? Or all of, especially if it's a big tour, it's like, are all the costs in here? This is what we've got. And then if that gets all clear, then it goes to the artist as well. And so, yeah, this is what, this is, we think this has got everything in it. So then they can come back with any questions and things like that.
Yeah, amazing. Putting the power back into the musicians' hands so that should they want it, it's there. And they can, and that they can put their themselves at ease and answer those questions in their own mind instead of getting a million questions for us. That's really important. I wanted to ask further to that. Do you think that with this power being placed back into the musicians' hands due to technology, that they are seeing further ways to monetize their music because of this transparency for them? Have you seen it, like, trends in that sort of space?
Yes and no. So I would say yes for certain artists. They can see and they look at it and they go, oh, or they'll say, I think I should have made more money on that. What happened? Or especially, I find, especially with merch, that's when they'll say, because I'll look at, especially if they're on tour, they'll look at how much merch that they've sold. But then when they look and see how much the merch cost and all the other things that go in there, and especially like things like freight and everything else, and they see what the net is, and they're like, oh, okay, so that's how it actually works. And it's the same as the live performance. I mean, what they see is how many people are actually in the room where they're doing the performance, or, but yeah, then it gives them that back end of exactly everything else that goes into that and all of the costs that are associated with it, from just not on the actual performance itself, but all the promotion and advertising and everything else that happens prior to that time as well.
Yeah, which by the sounds of it, it does a very good job at managing expectations.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
Exactly. Now, I want to touch on funding a little bit with you. In one of my previous episodes with Zach Abrams, we discussed some of the swirling questions around funding. Can you shed a little light on for us about what you feel is the state of federal, can you shed any light for us on what you feel is the state of funding and grants for musicians currently at both the state and federal level?
Yep. So I can't speak about all of the states, but in Victoria, the state of the funding is really is really great at the moment. There is a lot of opportunities around, and for different types. So there's, you know, there's regional touring funding, there's funding for independent recording, there's funding for international, there's like funding for like every single type that you could possibly need is there. And then at the federal level, well, with the new Music Australia coming on board, that's going to hopefully increase some of the funding. From what I hear, it's not going to be peer assist, it's going to be more quick response grants. So they're trying to do a turnaround really, really quickly for, and it's going to be more criteria based. But yeah, certainly Australia Council at the moment still has, like, they have a lot of funding that's coming up during the end, I think September. I mean, one of the biggest issues that we find from our end is that with the grant applications that are open now, they're for projects that start much later in the year, whereas some of them are starting in a few weeks and they're kind of like, oh, is there anything available? It's like, well, there was, but the funding for that, those applications were due 6 months ago. So I think it'll bridge that gap a bit. I think that's probably one of the main things that people get really frustrated about, is just that there's a bit of a timing
Yes.
between when the grants come, and then when the, I mean, it does make sense because then you know that you've got the grant before you actually commit to the project. But on the same token, sometimes artists might not know exactly when they're going to be ready for a project as well. And it might, you know, the creative process can take a lot longer, and sometimes it can take a shorter time than what they envisage. So, yeah.
So true. And I think you've really identified a very interesting gap or issue in that sort of space, in that there is a lot of grants that look at that 6 months, 12 months sort of timeline out in front. And, you know, realistically, in an ideal world, all musicians will have a 3-year timeline, but it is about, like, you know, how much down that timeline you can move and how fastly you can move down that timeline and stick to it, which, as my experience as an artist manager, is almost impossible. And also, I think what it sort of negates or doesn't necessarily consider is the fact that a lot of the time when we're making these plans for, you know, the next year, it's hinging off the success of X release or Y release, and if that success doesn't happen, then it does shift our timelines, hence making it very hard to predict, you know, is this actually going to be a grant that we can even apply for and utilize, should we even get it. And, you know, obviously to add on the extra factor of, like, if you're even considering that it's hours of work it's an investment realistically. So it will be very interesting to see where those new grants come into place and how fast they can actually help projects, basically.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I think anything that's a quick response grant, I think, is tends to benefit people quite a bit more. Like, certainly the long ones are great, but what we've seen a lot of the time, especially when you do their tax returns and they've got the grants in there, and we'll say, well, have you quitted it yet? They're like, no, there were extended delays, and sometimes those delays can go for years. So something that was meant to be acquitted, say, you know, in December 2022, might not actually be finished until mid-2024 or something like that. So,
you know, yes, the way it can happen. Yeah. And commonly, probably you need an extra grant to make the end of the grant from the previous one work.
Yeah.
Oh gosh, the pain, I feel it. I want to ask you now, you've run a business in the music industry for the last almost 20 years. Huge congratulations, by the way. What's been one of your best tools to sustaining a business within the industry that has had so many changes over this time?
So we did a few things. One is that we diversified. So we obviously had always done music, but we moved into film as well, and video games and theatre and other things as well. And one of the reasons for that is that, well, one, a lot of the referrals came from, everyone seems to know each other, but yes. the other part of it was that sometimes what's not, like, one way that's done in the music industry, they'll do it slightly different in, say, the film industry. And then you look at it and go, okay, well, we could apply that to the music industry, and that actually makes more sense in some way. So it's been able to then sort of expand how things might be done. Whereas, say, if you talk to someone that's only ever done music, they'll just say, well, this is the way it's done. And certainly when I started at another accounting firm that specialised in music in the late 90s, and it was all very manual then. Like, all the royalty statements came in the mail in, like, big, like, envelopes and things like that. You'd then have to trawl through, you know, there was, like, paper checks, and you know, there wasn't a lot of emails that just started to come in, you know. Then there was certainly no websites and portals and things like that where you could see exactly where, you know, how much you'd recouped and you know, where everything was at and that type of thing. So, look, from a technology perspective, it's made it so much easier with there being online portals and being able to see exactly which tracks are registered, how much they're making at the moment, what's coming up. You can see, you know, on some of them, even though, say, the royalty payment may not come until September, you can see online exactly how much it's generating to date, so you can already predict exactly how much it's going to be. And those sort of things have been really, really helpful just from a planning and cash flow perspective, and being able to forward plan rather than being, I guess, sort of more, well, this is like what's happening right now. You can then look and go, well, this is what should be happening in the future, or this is what looks like it's coming up. And so then you're planning more in advance to work out how you're going to get through the next two years, rather than, okay, well, this is where we're at now, and maybe what should have happened is this. It's more like forward thinking, which I think is really, really great.
Yeah, definitely. That's amazing to hear the huge change that it's had in that time. And God, I don't envy you those royalty slips that you used to get.
Yeah. My first job was for a band that had a lot of basically they had band splits, so they were a very successful band. I had a lot of departing members, but there was a agreement that on certain tracks that those departing members would still get a share of some publishing royalties and some recording royalties. So when you got the big statements, it was my job as, you know, the graduate accountant to sit there and type out in a big spreadsheet all of the different tracks. And this particular band had over 400 songs, and then there was like about 25 different people participating in the splits and things like that. So that it was, yeah, just it took days just to, yeah, type it all out. But now it's all just download CSV from, like, you know,
heaven
on a record label, and you pretty much sort it and it's done. It's like so much easier.
You must have so much more time up your sleeve now. Oh, I love that. Well, my last question for our episode today is, when you're 90 years old in a retirement home and wanting to brag to your room neighbor about what you did during your long life, what would you love to say to them?
Well, I'd be bragging about making 90 to start with. I think I'd be like, really, like, I can't believe I made it this far.
Aren't we all?
But apart from that, I think it would probably be just being able to say that I had a good mix of being able to run a business and also raise two happy and healthy children. Hopefully they're about to be teenagers, so we'll see how that goes. But, yes. I don't know. I'm playing the long game, so there might be some other things that have come up that I haven't quite been able to brag about yet. We'll see.
Yeah. I love that. That sounds really exciting. And, yes, I can imagine you're still, like, crossing your fingers about those teenagers and hoping that it's still going to work out.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure it will. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Meredith. It was lovely to talk to you about all things super tax and accounting in the music industry and beyond.
It was so good. Thanks for having me.